Go ahead, Jeff. You got cut off there.
Yeah, I'm going to turn it over to you guys. I mean, Gary and Chris Chico are the founders and inventors of REI Vault, which is a really good wholesaling program. They have a secret sauce on how to get good leads and stuff, and have set it up and given us everything we need. They're going to do everything for us but close the deals. So I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll kick it off, and then I'm going to add Chris will add to it. And our goal here is really just a free-flowing, honest conversation without, you know, we shouldn't hold back or hurt anybody's feelings. Jeff and I chat about that. Our goal is specifically Nicole and Jenna and, of course, Jeff, to get you guys performing and executing and making money. And you know, there's Chris and I, you know, we're entrepreneurs. We're very similar to Jeff. And then there's, you know, there's a point where you're closing deals on your own, and then there's a point where you're starting to, like, have a staff below you and, you know, and figuring out who's doing what. And so I think the goal, the objective for everybody is to get you all performing, making really good money doing this business, and also getting Jeff out of the middle so Jeff can be a coach. And Jeff can, you know, focus primarily. I talked to Jeff last week. Jeff, you know, he probably forgets more about real estate, the real estate business and closing deals than most real estate investors will learn in an entire lifetime. And the problem with that is sometimes it gets where you get him kind of stuck doing, and we want to get Jeff as a coach. So to have you guys really run the business. And I think there's a way to do it. Chris and I wanted to use this as an opportunity to introduce ourselves. You know, we've got a system in place that you guys now have access to that really should perform from a standpoint of, you know, finding the sellers. And then there's a process for closing the deals through follow-up and making offers and getting on the phone. And there's just a science to it. And I'm going to have, you know, Chris and I have, like, talked about sort of what we've seen. You guys have not only a number of leads right now, but you're about ready to have an absolute, complete overload of the system of leads. We dropped a lot of mail by mistake. It was supposed to go out over a period of time. So you guys are going to have, you're going to be like working it. If from a fishing, I'm a big fisherman, you know, fly fisherman analogy, you're about ready to be, you know, in a pond with fish jumping for joy, and you're going to have a lot of them. And so this is a really good time to kind of come together and, you know, get things sort of worked out. And so Chris made some observations. I'm going to pass it over to Chris on some of those observations. But the big one for me is Jenna and Nicole. You guys really should own the deals. You should own the leads and use Jeff as a coach. And as soon as Jeff has tasks where he's supposed to get on the phone with sellers, you're going to probably find a massive bottleneck. So you're going to, you know, what I talked to Jeff about is, you know, you want to stand back and be a coach and answer questions and not do the work, not get on the phone and say, oh, I'm going to talk to the seller. Because as soon as you have the relationship with the seller, they're going to want to talk to you from then on. And so you're going to want to coach Jenna and Nicole on what to say and review things together. And then Jenna and Nicole really be accountable for owning the number. So you don't have Jeff as sort of a blocker for you, because as soon as he gets busy, we all know what happens, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, I got this deal, and then it'll take 3 weeks for Jeff to get on it. Nothing bad with Jeff. It's just part of the process. So with that, Chris, you want to add some of your observations, and then we'll open it up and talk about how to move this thing forward for them?
Yes, I'll do that. So a couple comments that I wrote down, and I did. These comments came from kind of reading your email, Jeff, and also at the same time speaking with Gary about things. And the first one that comes to my mind is, you know, transitioning from being the I'm going to use the analogy of transitioning from the being the pilot to being the traffic controller. And by that I mean that, you know, if you initially you always begin as the person that speaks with the sellers, that makes the analysis of the properties, that, you know, moves the ball forward and eventually gets the deal to close. And so that's, you know, the equivalent of being the pilot. And so that works in the beginning as you're learning the business and you're just figuring things out. But eventually you want to transition to then becoming the traffic controller. So if we use that analogy where you're not the one that is speaking with the sellers or maybe even making all the decisions, you're managing the entire process to make sure that the planes take off on time, that nothing happens that's going to affect the business negatively, and you're there to assist and to coach and to answer questions so that you can help, you know, everyone else around you do better and become better. Because in the end, you don't want to be the smartest guy or the guy that knows everything, because then everybody comes to you. And so the intent is always that you want to coach and you want to mentor so that they can handle all those details that in the past you were the one that was directly handling. Right? Does that make sense, Jeff? Or did I lose you? Or am I? Okay. Is Jeff still there?
Jeff, did we lose you?
Yeah, makes absolute sense. So,
okay. So So one of the examples is, you know, you're good on the phone, and I can talk to sellers on the phone as well, and sometimes, you know, when you're there's a difference between, yes, you could make the calls yourself, and you could be better on the phone with someone. So you could be better on the phone with someone versus say your staff. But in the end, it doesn't help you, because the minute you initiate that conversation with the seller and the seller sees you as the go-to person, the guy that's making the decision, the guy that moves the ball forward, he's not going to want to talk to anybody else. So you have to. And so when that happens, then all of a sudden now you're the bottleneck. And the challenge with that, of course, is that then, you know, that's a problem. And so I always try to, no matter, you know, what the circumstances are, I always try to coach and to try to get them, get someone else to understand the big picture, help them with dialogue, but I want them to make the call, because if they make the call, even if they struggle with the call, they're going to get better. And, you know, in the end, that's what we want, right? The other thing I wrote down is that, like Gary said, you know, calling the seller, just making that call initially is always going to put you on the front line with them. And, you know, the example I wanted to give is dealing with things on a higher level. So the example I'm going to give you, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So the example, actually, I've got to switch my headset for 2 seconds. Give me one quick second here. So I'll give you an example of, I had a conversation with one of my guys, Steve. And we have, the way that I'm working with Steve is there's two other VAs that are assisting him. And we had made some offers that got accepted. And the next step is we want to make sure we get those offers out so that we can get the contract signed and bring in the deals. And so it's very easy for me to get on the phone with Steve, right? And this is more for you, Jeff. It's very easy for me to get on the phone with Steve and to really micromanage that process, to say, you know what, you got to look at this status and then check this off and then make sure this. And I could really go into the weeds. And I started to do that, and then I caught myself. And I said to Steve, I said, you know, Steve, what you got to do is you got to get on the phone with Gil. And Gil is the one that actually initiated the contact with the sellers. And I said to Steve, I said, you got to get on the phone with Gil. You got to figure out what are the offers that got accepted. You got to review the contracts, and you got to make sure they go out the door. And if we can get that done today, that's what we need to do. If you have any questions, come back to me. And, you know, so it's because what happens is that it's very easy to get into the weeds with explaining things and giving direction versus maybe giving more of a broader perspective on things, you know, a bigger picture, because getting into the weeds also slows you down. So whenever I have someone that I'm working with and I say and I'm trying to give them direction, I always work from more of a top-level approach. I want to give them the big picture, and then only if they ask, then I sequentially begin to go further and further and further into the details. Because they might know already, I could just say to Steve, make sure the contract is signed and make sure that they're okay. That's enough for me and Steve. I don't have to tell them, make sure the date is this, make sure that the address is that, make sure that this part of the contract is this, and look out for this, and look out for that. We've already gone through that process. Now, in the beginning, it was we had to go through that to make sure that the contracts were done correctly and everything else. Very quickly, we transitioned into, hey, make sure the contract is correct, and he knows exactly what that means, and we have a checklist for that, and we know it's going to get done the right way. And that's, in essence, what you want to work toward. So in the beginning, you might have to get into the details, but you want to try to migrate away from that because, in the end, that's just going to slow you down. And it's also going to frustrate other people around you because they're going to think, well, gee, I know how to do all this stuff, but yet you're treating me, and I'm not saying you are, but, you know, you're treating me like as if I don't know anything when, in fact, I know a lot. And also, too, a lot of times is also giving whenever I'm explaining anything or a process, I always try to give the big objective and the big picture, you know. So, like, for example, we're in the process of setting up a Craigslist for one of our markets, and it's very easy for me to disseminate that information in a very detailed way and get into the weeds. Well, first you gotta set this up, set that up, and everything else. And instead, what I did is I gave them more of a, you know, began with a brief overview, the objective. You know, here's what we want. We're going to be able to post ads on Craigslist at this frequency. We're going to be able to have the prospects do this, and then at the end, when all's said and done, they'll go ahead and they'll subscribe to our list. And I'm just using that as an example. But what ended up happening is one of the other team members came in and said, well, gee, if that's what you're trying to do, why don't you do it this way? And why not do this? And she came up with a couple of pretty good ideas that I would not have gotten if I would just gave them specific A to Z instructions. You know, and mind you, I did give them a checklist, but I allowed them to say, hey, this is what he wants. Let me dig into this, and maybe I might find a couple of different ways to do it that might be better or more efficient. And so that's the other thing that I try to do. The other thing is that we're doing on our end, and this is something I would strongly recommend, is use Podio. So whenever we go back and forth on deals, we everything goes back and forth on Podio. And I have a video how to do that, but you can copy someone on Podio. So that whenever, say, if there's a deal for seller, seller John Smith, and you wanted to ping him on the deal, you wanted to get advice on that particular deal from someone on the team, then someone, like, for example, if Jeff and I were working together, I would make a comment, but I would comment Jeff, and so Jeff would get a ping, he would get an email, and so all that back and forth would happen within the comments inside of Podio. And I'm not sure, have you guys seen the videos on Podio and that show how all that works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen the video.
Do you have any questions about that specifically? Because that's really one of the most important functions within Podio. And I think that it makes the entire process and the back and forth and making sure that everybody's on the same page and that nothing fits through the cracks, it makes it a lot easier.
Right. We started using that at function, you put the at sign and then type something into the person who's in Podio and it sends them an email. That's what you're talking about, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we've been using that. Gary showed me a month ago how to use that. I think where we want to get to at the end of this call is, you know, the metrics on what it takes to do one deal and, you know, setting some goals for these gals to have two signed contracts by the end of the month so that we can at least close one apiece, right?
Let me ask you this. What is your biggest, if you're going through the RAI Bolt start menu, you know, the items, what do you feel is your, if you were to think about the leads coming into the picture, what do you see as your main, you know, top one or two or three roadblocks that could stand in your way of you being able to take it?
It's been me because the way I set it up, the way I told them to do it was, you know, call the leads and the ones that sound hot, you know, at, you know, Podio to me, and then, you know, the Wizard of Oz will go in and close the deal, and then I get I'm the bottleneck deck, and I get backed up with everything I'm doing, and I don't make the calls. So, I mean, you can ask Nicole. I mean, she's been working with me for 2 years. I mean, I've been pretty good at not micromanaging her. How often do we talk some weeks, Nicole?
Sometimes we talk every 2 weeks.
So, you know, I'm maybe worse on the other end, but the problem is the way that I set it up. You know, we need to just set up the process here. I'll step out of the way and be available to coach them on the deals and have weekly. They need to be on the weekly huddle call with you guys, and we'll have our own huddle call on Thursday mornings. And then, you know, also there's a bunch of leads that the summer interns that are no longer summer interning took possession of, and we got to split them up between Nicole and Jenna. But,
yeah, let me add a couple things, Chris, and just kind of something that we've done in this transition, because we've been there. We've been exactly where you've been, Jeff, and more times than one. And you're not alone. Wayne Schaefer, a guy that has a large organization, they're shifting, and they've had the same issues, and Zeke Martinez. So you're all not alone. So that's good news. This is a very, very fixable process. But number one is, you know, all of you have very, very defined, clear objectives and accountability that are defined but also trackable. So there's no wiggle room. It's quantitative and qualitative information. Quantitative is the most important. And it really should be focused on money, right? Because the sales organization should do nothing but actually be accountable for closing deals. And then over time, you actually can adjust, because some people are focused on front end, typically called inside sales, which is moving leads from, you know, cold into, you know, an appointment. And then you got the closers. And so it looks like, I think Jenna and Nicole, you guys are going to both be playing kind of the inside sales and closer kind of role. And I think that's very doable. You know, Jeff should not be the closer in this process, and there's a way to do that. The accountable objectives, and then you clear off the plate. What I mean by that is you don't have any non-sales, activities, because, you know, then all of a sudden the objectives need to be the profit per month, right, on a calendar month for the month of August, as an example. If it's $15,000 per deal, and you want to do two deals that you close, then the number should be 2 times 15, which is your number that you're forecasting and working towards. Each person is 30 grand. That's the profit, and revenue coming into the business, which means...
Let me just stop you there. I think that that's a good metric. I don't think that we can acquire and close the two deals this month. I think that they should have two deals signed, looking to close one apiece in September. Do you guys agree? I mean, because we're sort of starting from a dead start.
Yeah, you can do that. You can actually, you know, I would start with the profit and have that, even if the month of August is zero,
right?
Because it does have right? It doesn't matter how many deals you have under contract or any of this doesn't matter unless you actually get the wire transfer at the end of the period. So I would still
start with nothing in the pipeline. Right.
Yeah. So you could have, you know, the month of August could be zero, but the number of signed, you know, number of closed deals, I'd have the number of closed deals, I'd have the number of signed contracts. So, you know, at the highest number is profit. You know, and what you end up doing is having once a week, having that forecast call, I think is important. It kind of creates camaraderie. It also, you know, what happens is it kind of forces accountability, because then you know that on Thursday you're going to have to come in and produce the numbers, and the numbers never lie. So it kind of keeps us motivated. And also for Jenna and Nicole, if that's what you're working towards and then all of a sudden you get all these non-money-making activities thrown at you of calling this person and doing this, like, menial task, you can actually push back. It gives you a reason to push back, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's profit, it's the number of closed deals, the number of signed contracts, the number of offers, written offers that are made, and a number of follow-ups that you're working, is really kind of what it comes down to. And we can, before we get off this call, we can kind of walk through what that should look like. And then you should also kind of go through what I'd consider your pipeline of top 10 deals, kind of what stage you're at, kind of where, you know, it basically just says, hey, here are my top 10 deals that I'm working towards getting, you know, momentum on. And I like to put a probability of the close and the expected close date. You know, as you start getting deals under contract and you're working to close them, well, your close date, you know, if it's not in contract but you kind of have a verbal agreement, then your expected close date on that contract is, you know, by Friday, I expect to have this signed and returned. And if you have the contract and you're working for a buyer, your expected close date could be next month. But you're at least working towards, you know, communicating, here's what I'm working. And the probability is, you know, 20%, 40%, and so you work that. I do one other thing, okay? So you have clear metrics. You have a weekly call that you never miss. Your Thursday call should never be missed. Even if you're on vacation, at the very least, you should be able to call in and have that Thursday call. It should always start on time. It should never be a minute late. Really working towards, that's the most important thing during the day. We do that. We actually have our calls, even with our staff. You know, Chris and I hate being on the phone, but we always make sure that we do these calls. I would do a daily huddle call. I think you guys should get in the business of having a daily huddle call. I actually think that once you start doing it, you'll never change it. Chris and I have a daily huddle call at 10 a.m. every morning, 1 o'clock Eastern. And when we get off track is when we miss our calls. So you have a daily huddle call. It can be literally 15 minutes. It doesn't need to be long. Jeff, you should probably do the least talking. It should be 80 to 90% Jenna and Nicole doing the talking and you doing 10% and really holding to that. The daily huddle call for 15 minutes, I think it should be, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the forecast call at the same time except maybe a little bit longer, and you do that daily. But the huddle call would be go through your successes. One success, I just got this one great thing that just happened. Doesn't matter what it is. It's just one success. And then what are your stucks? You know, and it would be an opportunity for, you know, Jeff, you know, I needed you to review this, or Jeff, I needed you to do this, or Jeff. It's all going to be, stucks are going to be related to something that's probably needed from you, Jeff. Okay. And you should be able to get, you know, literally it doesn't need to be a 10-minute, you know, answer either. It could be, you know, yes or no, or, you know, you should come out of there. You know, we're not talking about things that should take a lot of work. You know, if they have a stuck, they should be able to tell you what the stuck is, and you could probably give them the answer right over the phone. And Nicole and Jenna, trying to focus on whatever Jeff does to the best of your ability, Jeff should be kind of focused. If he can't do it over the phone, then he shouldn't be doing it. So if Jeff has to go build a spreadsheet or go write something up or write a contract, it probably is being done wrong. Get him out of the middle. You will scale faster. Over time, you'll probably realize you need some additional resources to do some of this stuff. And Jeff, as a manager, I know I'm probably giving you guys a lot, and I'll open it up for questions if something's not clear. But as a manager, especially in this role, it should be really simple. One is your job as the manager should be to provide clear, actionable, winnable objectives, right? This is what you're going to be measured on. You know, this revenue number, this number of contracts, and it should be totally revenue delivered and generated. Number two is, as a manager, you should remove roadblocks. So there should be no roadblocks for Jenna and Nicole. And a lot of times a manager is the creator of the roadblocks. So your goal is to remove all roadblocks to the best of your ability. If they need something, you know, as a good manager, you work to get it off of their plate and get somebody else to do it. Get and give answers. So as they're asking, you know, they'll ask a question around a deal, and within 10 seconds, they probably don't even need to tell you what the issue is. They'll say, I'm working on this seller, blah, blah, blah. You could probably interrupt and say, oh, just do this, right? Call them back and give, you know, tell them this, or do a takeaway close, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then as a manager, don't send anybody down any rabbit holes. So if something is like, oh, we got to go and reach out and go build this new funnel or get this new tool, that's a rabbit hole.
Right.
You don't need any more, anything. It's like, it just, you know, most of this is going to be send them an offer for 150 grand or get them on a follow-up letter or call them back up and say, oh, you know, Mr. Seller, I apologize for calling. I have this one more question for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
Do these types of things, but it should almost all be over the phone. And then, as Chris said, do everything in Podio. Get to a point where everything that you do is in Podio, interacting with Podio, documenting, because you can have a record of the deals, because it all comes down to the deals that you're closing. And then, you know, sending out offers, meaning, you know, writing up a Word document with an offer, but trying to stay away from all the other sources of communication, because that's what we're doing with everybody, and it does work. We get everybody to, you know, hey, if you got a question or you're working a deal, just document it and send it over if you want me to look at the comps. And then, Jeff, you've got to be available. You've got to make yourself, you need to clear off your own plate. And you know, you should be able, everything that you're doing really needs to be, you know, within 3 to 5 minutes, you can provide the solution for them. If you have a project that's going to take you a half hour or an hour, you know, it might be a month before you do it, right? So does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it helps me. Jenna and Nicole, I mean, I think what? Jenna and Nicole need to do some talking here.
Well, I was going to make a comment about the calls, comps. So, you know, whenever I'm reviewing comps, I always ask, like, say, if Jenna and Nicole are reviewing a property and they're going to make a determination of what the value is and what the offer would be. So the way to do it, Jenna and Nicole, would be that, let's say an offer comes in and you're trying to analyze it and you're making a comment so that Jeff can review it, is always give a broader answer than just, you shouldn't just put, okay, value, 175, offer, you know, 100,000. I'm just using that as an example. Because that doesn't give Jeff a frame of reference. Doesn't give Jeff an, you know, kind of an idea of what your thinking is behind that, so he can effectively critique it. So you would say, you know, I think the property is worth this, and because of XYZ, and here's what the offer would be based on us, you know, and here's why I think this offer would, you know, this is how I came up with my offer. So then that way, when Jeff gets that, he'll review it, and then he could critique not only the number on the property, but also he could critique your thinking and your analysis in order to make adjustments, right? Because in the end, he needs to understand what's the reasoning behind the offer so that he can better give you an idea, right? Does that make sense, guys?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. The other thing I would do is, as leads come in and you're going through this back and forth, don't review 20 leads and then send them to Jeff. And then Jeff figures out that you're kind of doing something wrong, but now you got to go back through those 20 leads and redo them again. So I like to work in increments. So I would say, when I first start working with my guys, I say, you know, send me 5 or 6 leads. Review 5 or 6 leads. Give me your comments. Let me look at them. Make sure that, everything's going in the right direction. Make sure we don't have to make any adjustments. And then you'll do the next 5 or 10, and you'll increase it from there. Because if you're doing something, maybe you're looking at the comp report the wrong way, or you're putting the information the wrong way, then at that point, then what you want to do is you want to be able to correct that early on in the process, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Right. So that's the other thing I would say with regards to the commenting back and forth. On Podio, you know, also use the tasks. Right. So in other words, it's easy to move deals through the different statuses and sometimes lose track of them. And I find that the best way to make sure that nothing slips through the cracks is to create a task. If you talk to somebody and you might put a follow-up tag and you might say, you know what, they're not ready yet. They saw, or maybe they say, you know what, Jenna, give me a call back in a couple of weeks. I'm having some health issues, but they should be cleared up in a couple of weeks. And at that point, then I can go ahead and talk to you about it. Then put every to-do in an action item and a reminder, you know. Many times I might look at a lead and I might say, you know what I would do is I would just give them a call in a couple weeks. And so I might give them instructions, or sometimes I might put it on the task or make comments on the task. But, you know, use tasks because that helps in making sure that nothing sticks through the cracks. The other thing that I find helpful is that sometimes a lot of people ask me about confidence, right? About how do you develop the confidence when talking to sellers to make sure that you sound good on the phone, that you're able to make the right decision. You know, you're able to get them to move along. And so the one thing I would always try to work off is a script. So you guys should always be working off a script. The script is continually tweaked, but you know, you guys have been through Straight Line, and so you know the importance of a script. And the great thing about the script is that when you are following a script, you're not thinking about what you're going to say next. And that's a really key important thing, because if you're not thinking about what to say next, you're listening, which means that you're paying attention, you're listening for cues, you're listening for motivation on the other side of the picture with the seller, and that's always going to enable you to be better on the phone. But when you're not having to think about what you're going to say next, then that's going to give you confidence already there. So my belief is that you should always be working on a script with everything you say to the seller. If you find you work with a basic script and then you find that, hey, there's maybe a particular one or two things that you're always telling a seller and that you see as important in the transaction and in the getting them across the finish line, then I also believe that those things should be scripted as well. The second thing is I would also encourage you guys to record your conversations. And the way we do it is we use Skype, and we use a recorder on Skype, and we can send you the links for those. And every time you make a call, the Skype recorder is always playing, and those files are always being dropped into a folder on either Google Drive or you can use Dropbox. And that way, Jeff can listen in and listen to the calls, and then he could better help you guys and say, you know what, I noticed on the call you did this, you did that. I would say this way better, or I would approach them differently. Or, you know, I listened to a call today and with one of our new guys, and, you know, definitely I saw a variety of different things, lack of confidence. And that was because of the script. And so I told Steve, you know, you got to role play. And that's one of the things that I would encourage you guys is to also to get the script down to role play. I remember when I was a realtor, as an agent, I got trained by the My Fair organization, and we used to role play every single day going through the script for 30 minutes, back and forth. So you guys should be doing that just to go through the process and learn that script inside and out, so that the moment a seller says something, you're not thinking about, well, what am I going to say? How am I going to answer that? You already know that, and that's going to, you know, give you more confidence. But definitely I'm a big believer in recording the conversation. Because like today, me and Steve were listening to a couple of the calls, and we're like, yeah, we got to fix that. We got to fix this. He'd be better saying this. He should work on this. But there's no way that's going to happen without having the call recordings. And so that's the other thing I would definitely say, is to make sure that the calls are being recorded. But those are the couple of quick comments that I was going to mention on my end. Jenna or Nicole, any comments or any questions? Or you, Gary, any comments or questions about that?
No, that makes sense that it would be good to record them so we can get feedback on it. I guess I have a question in relation to knowing how to evaluate the leads, because a lot of times, you know, I'll get what I think is a good lead and then I'll send it to my dad and it turns out that maybe they want to sell the property for more than we could profit off of it for. And I'm not really sure how to go about, I guess, appraising the property and figuring out what they want, like if what they want for it is going to be profitable for us.
Okay. So I have two questions about that. So the one question, so two questions about that is that, number one, I know there's a lot of material, but did you get a chance to go through the materials on property analysis and analyzing properties and so on that I referred to on the REIVault.com/starts? I think I did a video for you guys. Have you gone through that material or no?
I don't think I was able to go through that one until this point.
What I would do, and then also the other question I had is that when you brought a property to your dad, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Jeff, but this is just an honest question. when he told you that it wasn't, when you thought it was a particular deal or particular numbers and it wasn't, right? You misjudged the analysis. Did Jeff tell you the reasons? Like, the other back and forth has to be that you have to tell him why you think that is, and he has to, at the other side, because it's a two-way street, you have to tell him why you think that the price is and why you made that analysis. And on the flip side, he has to tell you, if he doesn't agree with you, the reasons why also. Is that something that happened on the exchange or no? Or was it just simply, I think it's worth this, and he said, no, it's not worth that, it's worth this, and that was the end of it?
I think that a lot of times, my dad will kind of just he'll tell me, you know, like they wanted full retail for it, so that's why it wouldn't work out. But I guess we haven't gone further into detail about how we can analyze that.
So he has to. So one of the things that Jeff has to do is that it's very easy, like especially when it comes to, you know, in real estate, Jeff, with his experience, he can look at a deal and know, oh, that's not a deal. I know it. And the reason he knows it is because of a lot of data that he has inside his mind and inside his brain about all the real estate knowledge that he has. And so he's able to make that quick decision on that property. But he needs to walk through, like, the process that's going on in his head. You know, like, he is the reason why. It's because of, you know, because the property is located in this neighborhood. In this neighborhood here, it's kind of tough because of these reasons. Or you might, you know what, that property, it's really not going to be a deal, and here's the reason why. Because it's a really small house, and it's this, and it's that. So he has to really do a better job of, and that's where the exchange has to happen, because it's a two-way exchange, because he has to understand what's going on inside your brain, right, as far as why you're making that decision. So if you tell him, hey, I think it's a deal because I think it's worth X, that's not enough for him. So you got to tell him enough so that he understands why you're making that decision, and Jeff on the other side then has to give you input on his end as far as, hey, why, because that's the only way you're going to be able to learn. So kind of go both ways. It's a two-way street. So I think it's a combination of that and also going through the training, you know, and I know the amount of training that's in there, you're not going to be able to have gone through it in the time that I sent you the email and today. It's just a lot of material. But going through that training definitely helps, but more important than the training is that back and forth. And just so that you guys know, that's how I learned. When I first got into the business as a real estate investor, I was actually mentored by a guy that was buying most of my deals when I was an REO broker, and I became a real estate investor. And literally all we would do all day is I would say, hey, here's a deal. I would come to him and say, hey, I think I got a deal, and here's the reason why. And he'd come back to me and says, no, that's not a deal, and here's the reasons why. And we did that every single day, back and forth. And over the course of a year, I got a tremendous, you know, even before that, within a couple months, I was making decisions, and he trusted my decision-making process because of the fact that he just coached me along, and that's really what you guys need. You need that back and forth.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense to you, Jeff, too?
Yeah, it makes sense. One of the things that where I'm getting a little stuck is, you know, we're gonna totally change the process, and that's no problem, because the process was, if it sounds good, flip it to Daddy, right? Or flip it to
right.
Jeff. Nicole. You still there, Nicole?
No, I'm here. I'm listening. I'm good.
All right. Just checking. Now, when we talked last week, Gary, you said everybody gets an offer. My understanding was, even now, if they're full retail, I mean, you know, $250,000 is for the after repaired brand new house on the block, and this guy's got an older house, he still wants $240,000. We're going to do our metrics, and we're going to come in and give it an offer, for example, of 120, right? And just let it sit and keep talking to that guy until he buys or dies. I mean, is that right, Gary?
I would get in the habit. So every deal, you figure that it costs, you know, just come up with a number. It costs $50 per time that you get on the phone with the seller. Come up with some number, whatever it might be, $50, $100 bucks, right? You need to make a decision. When you get off the phone with that seller, you make a decision. Is it dead? And I want to remove him from, I never want to talk to this guy again, or you're going to make him an offer and follow up. It really should be those two branches, right? And if it's a dead deal, then you should mark it as dead and put kind of why. You know, pretty house, you have no chance. It's something you do not want to buy. It's in a war zone, whatever it might be. Or you're gonna work that deal, right? And really, you should be making them an offer. Chris does a really good job. Don't assume anything. You know, we were just chatting with somebody last week. Half the deals, 80% of your deals will be deals that you didn't actually think you were going to close because the seller wanted too much money.
I mean, if I could stop you right there, Gary, as a salesperson, that was probably the most important lesson I ever learned, and I learned it from my dad, which is not to prejudge sales situations.
Right.
When I started with him, he had a garment center textile business. I was a kid, and there was no accounts, so they gave me all these people that they never called on, or, you know, we made woven goods, so they gave me knit accounts, right, that didn't buy the stuff. And I was too green to even know the difference, and I would go up there and show them our line of stuff. And don't you know, I would get these weird orders, like $100,000 yard order from a guy that makes knit garments, and then we're using something we had as trim.
Right.
So I think
go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. No, I agreed with when all said and done, I would rather send an offer to everybody, you know, that comes through, because the numbers are going to pay themselves out. The thing you got to also look at is I always say, it's relative. Everything is relative, not absolute, right? So I always think about it in terms of that, let's say you talk to 15 or 20 people today, and, you know, you're still kind of on the fence with a few of them, you're trying to work things out, and ideally, yes, you'd want to send out an offer to everybody, but you also have to prioritize, right? You don't want to prevent the really good prospects from getting the offer first, right? Because your system is backlogged with a bunch of other stuff that, you know, if it waited a couple of days to get out, it wouldn't make that much of a difference. So I'm always mindful of that. Like, in other words, you know, you always got to be mindful of, and Gary talked about this when I was in real estate, and the same thing here. I told my guys here as a real estate investor, I said, if you have 30 hot leads, that means you have 10 leads and you got 20 leads that are not that great, and those 20 are preventing you from really staying on top of the 10. So you always got to be mindful of, I always think about 10 leads. What are the 10 properties that we're trying to get across the goal line? And by that, I mean, we're trying to get a contract on those. So either the contract is out and waiting for it to get back, so we have to be aggressively following up, that we made an offer, but we got to follow up, or maybe, you know, the numbers are not there and we got to get an offer in writing to them. So those take priority over everything else. Then you might have another bucket that, like, you know, I talked to this guy, he's not really that motivated, but I think that there might be something there. You know, yes, send them an offer. But, you know, if you take 2 or 3 days to send them that offer, it's not a big deal because they're not hot to trot. But you got to be always focused on which are the priority VIP people you want to get across the goal line as much as you can. And, you know, what we found is that, you know, if we get somebody that, say, wants $150,000 for their property, and market value is $150,000, $145,000, and we talk to them and, you know, barely any motivation, right? It's just nothing there. Are we going to send them an offer? It just depends. If we got, you know, it depends how many leads we have on the table. So with you guys, I would definitely say one of the biggest things that you got to be careful with, especially with the number of leads that are coming in, is prioritization. You've got to make sure that you don't lose the hot ones in the sea of average leads. And your objective is, yeah, you want to get everybody, but you really got to be focused and say, you know, hey, we got, what are the ones that we know that are the highest leads that we're going to target and we're going to go after with aggressively, and just make sure that those don't get lost in the, you know, get those contracts out first before anybody else, even if the other ones wait a couple of days. But, you know, just be attentive to that there has to be urgency with those that are really at the cusp of you, you know, getting the deal.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys wanted to write this down, if you wanted to kind of come up with a starter boilerplate for what your forecast, what your numbers should be, starting in August. I could give you what I would recommend based on the discussion I've had with Jeff and this call. I would plan to do $30,000 of profit, but your profit will probably come in September. So you'll get most of your deals under contract in August. Do this on a calendar. It's a calendar basis. So the first of the month, you always start over. So it should never roll, and it should be literally, you don't fudge on the numbers. If something closes on the second, you know, it's counted in that current calendar month. So I would start profit per person, and it has to be, you know, per person. I'd have a little bit of competition. I think healthy competition is a good thing. Because we're always kind of going after, you know, who's the closer, and it always raises our game. And you also want to kind of take the variability. You don't want to have dependence. A good sales team, you know, a good salesperson will have, they're their own CEO, so they're not dependent upon anybody. Okay? So $30,000 in profit, which means, you know, two deals closed. And then what we do is in order to get two deals closed, typically you want twice that in contracts signed. So you'd have four contracts signed in that calendar month, okay? Because some of those contracts will either fall out or they'll close in the next month. The number of offers, written offers that have been made, and I really think it should be written, not verbal, because written you can track. And the way we do it is we say the number of contracts that you want, signed contracts, multiply that number by five. That means, you know, five times four means 20 offers were made in that calendar month. And then I'd also have the number of people that are kind of in the follow-up queue. And I think that number should probably be between, you know, 150 and 200% of the number of offers made. So between 30 and 40 follow-up. And if you really can do this, you should also have the number of live conversations that you've had with sellers. You know, you should probably have between 50 and 70 live conversations in a calendar month with the seller. That doesn't mean you left a voicemail. It means live. Probably between two and four sellers a day. If you start getting, you know, initially there'll be more sellers, but over time it'll probably average out to two to four sellers a day. If you run the math, it actually works out to the close rate of two deals a month. Okay? And that really should be tracked and updated, on a weekly basis. If not, you know, frankly, a good salespeople, really good salespeople. The professional salespeople track this on an hourly, you know, daily basis. It keeps us motivated and on point. If you guys have the ability of doing this like on a Google Doc, on a Google Drive, so the numbers are actually shared and they can be, you know, seen.
We'll set up our virtual whiteboard on the Google Drive. I'll do that.
Yeah, that'd be really good. So you track those numbers and then you kind of walk through your top 10 deals. Here's my top 10. You know, they're cooking. I got a verbal acceptance, I got a signed agreement, or, you know, a deal fell out. And you're kind of walking through those, and that's kind of an update. The other thing, you know, for Jenna and Nicole, I really think you guys should have the mentality of being your own CEO. You're accountable for delivering those numbers to the business, because if you deliver those numbers, everybody's making money. You guys are making money, Jeff's making money. I would also have an attitude of make a decision, ask for forgiveness later. So, because if you're always worried about making a mistake or what would Jeff do, you guys will never, you know, Jeff is going to, really, he's going to forget more about this business. And ultimately, within 3 to 4 months, Jeff should be working on the 100,000 plus profit deals. You know,
you find it's better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. I agree.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the other thing that we do is sometimes the phone can be a complete waste of time. So you need something that needs to be reviewed in 5 minutes, takes an hour, and you get all this backstory and go off on tangents and things. If you're documenting in Podio and you can ask the question in Podio, it forces you to think about what the question is. The other thing that Chris got me on this, and this has made me so much more effective, but you use a little $50 product. You could write this down. It's called Snagit. Snagit from Texna. It's a little $50 product. And what you could do, Chris and I do this, where you record a video. Let's say Jenna, that you got a deal, and you just this thing is always running on your computer. You just click a little button and it records, and it'll record your screen. And you can actually just record, you know, and walk him through the 3 to 4 minutes of, like, you know, hey, here's the comp, here's the thing, here's my question. And you can just upload that to the Podio record, and then Jeff could do the same thing. Jeff could review it, and he either types it real quick, or he could review, you know, record a 2-minute video. And if you did that back and forth, you got the record of it. You also have training, because as you guys add staff and hire summer interns and things, or, you know, fall interns or winter interns, or year-long interns, they'll be able to have some training off of deals, because as you close deals, they can go back to the record and kind of learn and see all the materials from that, you know? And the other thing of trying to get Jeff on the phone, you know, it could be tomorrow or next week. If you just record it, you know, maybe one of the things that happens is Jeff says, hey, I'm going to spend, you know, 3 to 4 o'clock every day. I'm going to review all the stuff in my queue, and I'm going to answer it, and I'm just going to do that every single day. So that, you know, at 4 o'clock, you guys are going to get a whole bunch of, you know, my answers. And that could prevent, because I don't like the huddle call being a long, laborious, you know, it really should be a 15-minute just, hey, you know, Jeff, hey, you didn't review these things. Can you jump on this, and, you know, and then Jeff needs to, you know, every single day. We come back and it's like, hey, Jeff, we talked about this, but I didn't get any answer from you. You know what I mean? That's what the huddle call is for. It's not for laborious, you know, question and answer. That should happen throughout the day. Chris, would you agree with all that?
Yeah, I would agree with all that, and also keeping in mind that not everything is urgent, you know, and so it's easy to, what I try to do is that I try to operate mostly through email, right, because if you need a lead reviewed, typically not out of 10 leads you review, and that you need an answer for. If Jeff gets back to you in a couple hours, it's typically not that big of a deal. 2 or 3 hours, you know, when he sits down and starts reviewing leads. And then every so often, you might have a lead that is urgent, you know, that, hey, I talked to this. This is a really good deal. I think we should jump on this right away. And maybe on those, you might ping him and say, hey, Jeff, out of all the leads, this one here particularly, I really think it's a good deal. I'd love for you to look at this one first. And so one of the things I'm always attentive to, and I do this with Gary, I hardly ever text message Gary, and Gary knows that. I most of the time email him, because I'm like, if it's not urgent, I'm not going to send you a text message. You know, I'm going to email you, and then when you get a chance to sit down, then you review that email, and at that point, then we could just go ahead and have a discussion about it. And so what that does is that it enables you to bring up to the top of the line, to the top of the heap, anything that is really of importance. And so then if Jeff might have a bunch of emails, but then at that point then you might say to him, hey, this one or two deals, go ahead and review those first before anything else. So that's the other thing that I try to operate, is just that not everything is urgent, and just be mindful of really what's the thing that really needs an answer for right now, and what are the things that could wait. Because then if everything is urgent, that means that nothing is urgent, and that things will fall through the cracks. So that was the other thing I was going to mention about just generally just the way I operate, even with my guys. You know, they need to review a lead, they'll just put it in the batch, they'll know I'll get to it. But if it's something really important, they'll ping me and say, hey, look at this as soon as you can.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You're only looking at a couple, you know, a month or two to get this thing really working and refined. The amount of time that, Jeff, you got to be very cognizant of being, you know, available to answer questions, you know, and review things. And as calls are recorded, really listening and providing feedback. But after a month or two, 3 months, your amount of time is going to substantially go down. And then you got Jen and Nicole really running this engine.
Okay. And also, the other thing I was going to mention in this approach, this will go with everybody, and this is something, I don't know if you know it, if you've been on the call, Jeff. On the call, we always tell people, whenever you ask your question, always ask your question first. Tell me what it is you want, and then tell me the backstory. And we do that on the calls, but I actually do that every time I talk to anybody, period. And when my guys talk to me about property, they can easily get into the backstory. Well, you know, I talked to this lady, and she did this, and let me tell you the story. And I'm like, well, what are you trying to figure out? Well, tell me first. And many times you get right to
This is great, guys. Wow, it's a lot. I think it's a lot to absorb all in 1 hour. I'm going to have to excuse myself for my next business meeting. And
yeah, we all do. I got
to go at the top of the
I'm actually in the car. I'm on road to a doctor's appointment, which I'll get there in about 5 minutes.
Should we make a follow up, like circle back in a week or something and see how we're doing, or what do you guys want to do about that?
Let's do this. We'll send you the recording. You guys will have I'm sure you'll spend it a week, and we can get back on a call. We'll make it shorter, make it 20 minutes.
Okay.
And just review progress and answer some questions and see how this thing is progressing.
So should we try to get back together next Monday afternoon?
You know, it'd be great. I love a couple things. I love for you guys to implement the back and forth on Podio, right? Number one.
Okay.
I love to have a conversation with trying to figure out kinks that, you know, if you go through the call and we run through the actionable items, right, is figuring out, I like to be able to have a call discussing kinks and issues that have come up implementing the stuff that we talked about.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, it would be great if you guys could go through the calls on analyzing properties in that little section of REI Bolt, that start. Go through that. The ones on Podio. And it would be great to have a conversation where, hey, we tried to implement these things. But also in the meantime, however, like, as you're implementing this, get us some emails so that we can, if you get a roadblock, we don't want to wait a week and a half for you to fix it. If you have a roadblock or you think something isn't clear, send us an email at the deal help. I get those. Gary gets those. A few other people get those. But we'll reply to those right away. But I'd love to be able to have a call where we discuss, hey, we tried implementing everything. These things were great, but we had a couple kinks here, and now we can help work out through those kinks.
Okay.
So maybe it might be better for you to reach out to us back, Jeff, and say, you might reach out in a week and a half and say, hey, guys, we implemented this stuff, and we got some kinks that we weren't able to work through email, and I'd love to set up a time.
Okay.
And then we'll set up, you know, more than happy to get on the phone with you.
I would love to do it where we've
actually implemented some stuff, and then we can work through that. Because it would just be more valuable.
So what I emailed out to everybody while this was going on is a conference bridge number for us to have a daily huddle call at 10 a.m. I want these ladies to take from 9 to 10 and study their REI Vault stuff, all right? So that we're chipping away at that stuff, because if we don't plan the time for it, it's not going to happen.
Right.
And
right.
The 10 a.m. call on Thursdays will be the, what do we call that? The pipeline
focus.
Call.
Yeah, the
pipeline call. And the numbers, you know, metrics, the salespeople metrics. And we'll do that Monday through Friday. And Friday afternoon or over the weekend, I'll let Gary and Chris know how it went, and we'll see if we want to get together again next week sometime for working out the kinks.
Okay.
Yeah, I love this, you know, to have that call. Gary already dropped because he had an appointment, so I'm the last one left standing.
Okay.
Okay, guys. So,
but in the meantime, in between the calls, yeah, anything comes up, the best email is that deal help. Because what happens is simultaneously,
right,
Gary and I get that email, and we can track it, and we can make sure that all the things are responded to. Any kinks you have, questions, just shoot it to us. And we love to see you guys making some progress. We're here for you. So anything that we need to do in order to help you guys succeed, we're willing to do. And I'm excited for you guys. You know, we'll chip away at it, and we'll make it work.
Chris, I just wanted to say also the bracket system, I was looking at that, analyzing the deals, and that sounded, it made a lot of sense, and it really broke it down much easier than just, like, trying to figure out, oh, is it a good deal or not?
Yes.
Okay.
And most deals, I appreciate that, and most deals will either work in that, or depending on your market, like, we do a lot of cash flow properties down here, and in some of the markets I work with, so there's a call that I have, or that it's listed on the REI Book of Course I Start, that talks about how to analyze properties based on the ROI method, right? And
okay.
I'm not sure how that may fit with your market or not, but always keep in mind that you're just you don't need to do an exhaustive analysis of the property, right? You don't need to spend 20 or 30 minutes. And like, the bracketing approach is designed that you want to know if you're in the ballpark. If it's in the ballpark, so that way you can start the process of trying to get that deal on the contract. But any questions you have about that, let me know.
Okay, yeah, thank you. It made it a little bit, like, less scary looking.
Okay.
Jenna, if you need to take off, I know it's after 4 now. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta go. I'm actually just pulling up but chiropractor appointment, so I gotta ditch.
Okay.
But, hey, great talking to you guys, and I look forward to our next call, okay?
Yeah, you too.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.